League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gau Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, quick word here as we welcome you back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 for Bud Light Bud Fight. Bud Light, the official beer of the Houston Dynamo and the Mexican national team. And Bud Light reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com, get your season tickets for the Dynamo and Dash. Bud Light reminding you to get down to the beautiful BBVA Compass Stadium. Catch a Dynamo, all the international soccer content, including the Gold Cup coming. Gold Cup will be down at BBVA Compass Stadium, plus Mexico and Honduras over at Energy Stadium. Bud Light, the perfect beer for whatever happens. Liberty Kitchen, one of my favorite restaurants here in Houston. Award-winning chefs at these places, Liberty Kitchen and Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette, serving up the best in seafood and meats. Fresh fish, oysters, gumbo, amazing steaks and burgers, serving breakfast on the weekends. It is LibertyKitchenOysterette.com, and check in with my good friend Carl Eves, who's involved with the HFA and a huge soccer fan. We thank the Liberty Kitchen for their support of soccer on the radio. With that, from the Montreal Gazette, he's a former professional soccer player with the Montreal Impact, also a man that you have seen, if you are up in Canada, you have seen him a number of times on television and various networks, including the last World Cup. He is Lloyd Barker. Lloyd, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Glenn.
Well, let's start off with, you know, having just been up in Vancouver and really experiencing some wonderful things in Canada. I'm interested to get your take on the impact of the Women's World Cup on the country and then potentially down the road what you think it could do for soccer in general and then the women's game.
Well, I know it's woken up this place, that's for sure. You know, I'm glad to hear you say you've come up here and spent some time, especially in Vancouver. It's one of the pride provinces of the country. Take nothing away from anywhere else, including where I live here in Montreal in Quebec. But Vancouver has some sights to be seen, and postcards do that place no justice, as I'm sure you've witnessed yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It's from that aspect, it's great because the world is focusing on this country. It's getting to know the place, and that's one of the beauties of each World Cup. You really get to know that country from the features on television, et cetera, et cetera. But it's certainly woken up this place. I mean, I know a lot of people are going to games that wouldn't necessarily leave their house to even go to a Montreal Impact game, but they're doing so for the sake of the magnitude of what the games represent and the fact that it's a World Cup. So people are really coming to grasp with that understanding. It's a World Cup. It's not just a regional tournament. It's not a friendly. It's not, you know, it's a World Cup. And we've got a quality side here, the Canadian women do, women are rather. And so it's you know, when you put that all together, it's really a big moment for the country.
Yeah, and Canada, you know, obviously has progressed in the tournament. They haven't played the best of soccer under their manager, John Herdman. John has certainly been a guy that, in my time up there, was really out in front of the media. In his media that he has been doing, how do you see it? And has he been a bit of a salesman on the performances of Canada?
Well, he is. I think he gets what this thing is all about because, quite frankly, he's come here to Canada and realized that, you know, the men we're in a position where they could be overtaken by the women, and not so much that there's a competition, but he saw an opportunity to not only to improve his program, but to make his program the primary program in this country. And traditionally, that's not the case. Traditionally, the men's program is the bread and butter of the country, and the women program kind of, you know, is on the sidelines, a secondary product. Well, here in Canada, the reality is, as much, and funny enough, the men, they've just started their World Cup qualifying, got by Dominica over two legs so that they move on to the next round. But the women now, it's hard to argue that at the very least, they're on even standard with the men in this country as far as a national program. And John Herdman understands that, and he saw an opportunity to jump in there and do that with this program. And I think behind the scenes, the people are really appreciative of what he's done because he's put footprints into this program that were not there before. And these are footprints that will probably last for a long time. So I wouldn't say he revolutionized things, but he certainly put an individual imprint that is serving for now, and you could see where this is going to be serving long term. So he's been a very good salesman, but at the same time, you can't sell a product that's not authentic, and he's made the product authentic. The women's program is on a different level than it's ever been, ever in the history of the program, we could see where this thing could be a long-term success, and that's because of the John Herdman effect. He's done a wonderful, wonderful job identifying talent, instilling programs throughout the provinces where these talents could be nurtured, and then finally to select them for the big program. He's worked towards this world championship now for the last 3 years. I mean, keep in mind, Canada finished last at the last World Cup in 2011. That was 16. There were only 16 teams then. And they finished dead last. They scored one goal up in three matches and conceded seven. And now they're a different story. They're on to the quarterfinal. So that alone shows how far they've come. And John Herdman, I tell you what, and you use the word salesman, it's a very good word. But again, you have to sell. You can't sell a product that's not proper. And he's selling a product that is proper that he built.
He's Lloyd Barker of the Montreal Gazette joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Also played for the Montreal Impact. Let's talk a little bit more about women's soccer in Canada and this impact here, because it just seems it seems in some ways, because the games are in five different time zones, it seems so spread out and so grandiose. Yet, you know, we're really seeing crowds pick up. We're seeing energy. Do you think, you know, 6 months down the road here now, it shows some tangible sort of results from being the hosts?
Well, traditionally, and it's been proven that there's usually a spike, in particular the Women's World Cup, in the Women's World Cup, wherever it's been hosted, there's usually a spike in registration for girls' soccer. It's been a rising product here anyway in Canada year after year. The numbers keep rising in terms of women. We have one of the best players in the world here in Christine Sinclair, and that always helps. So there's a face to identify with the young girls here. And so I do suspect that the fact that the tournament was being held here and the fact that the program is picking up and is steadily growing under the influence of John Herdman, as I just mentioned, and they've had success. I mean, they're coming off, you know, from 2011 finishing last at the World Cup, to immediately after that in 2012, they won a bronze medal at the Olympics, very unlikely medal. And now we're a couple of years removed from that, and they're in the quarterfinals, probably marching to the semis of the World Cup. And these things won't just be, you know, they won't just turn the page at the end of this tournament. I do believe behind the scenes, the Canadian Association are figuring out a way of how to kind of get this aura now that's so positive for soccer, women's soccer in particular, to continue. And I do suspect it will continue. How long it will last is a different question. But I have full trust in John Herdman to be able to leverage what's happening now and all the positiveness that's surrounding the women's game and the women's program. And I don't want to just speak of it as a team. I really have to speak of it as a program, because it goes all the way down to the grassroots. Funny enough, I did the World Cup with John Herdman, the men's World Cup, last season. He was an analyst as well, and we spoke quite at length about, you know, how he sees the game and especially the women's game. We did touch on the men's game a little bit, but we spoke a lot about the women's game and just how he's kind of got his hand in every aspect of the women's game in this country. That's never been done before. And so I do suspect that with all of this, and, you know, my gosh, imagine if they go to the finals, or God forbid they win this thing. I mean, we will speak again on that, but for sure, this is going to go well into the future in terms of leverage.
Well, Lloyd, we will definitely speak again in the future. I want to thank you for giving us a great update on the Women's World Cup, its impact in Canada. And like you said, Vancouver's an amazing place. I had just an amazing 18 days there, and it's not the last time I'm going to go there. I can promise you that. Thanks again, Lloyd, for your time. We appreciate it, bringing all your great insight to ESPN 97.5 here in Houston.
Pleasure, Glenn. You have a great day. See you back in Canada soon, buddy.
Yes, you will. Next time, hopefully, we'll get together. I'll come to your town, Montreal.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Lloyd. Quick word here, the Daspit Law Firm working for you 24-7. Houston personal injury attorneys. They handle injury cases, plant and refinery accidents, medical injuries, 18-wheeler, right on down to boat and car accident. DaspitLaw.com. 713-364-0915. It's DaspitLaw.com. My thanks to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are supporters of the game of soccer. Toll free, 888-273-1045 in English and Spanish.
All right, we get big-time guests around here. We even get guests who have played in the Copa America. And you know Giles Barnes, but before we get to him, this interview will be brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get down to the CONCACAF Gold Cup. The CONCACAF Gold Cup will feature, and this is July 11th, this is the perfect segue for our guest. Jamaica will take on Canada at 5:30. It's a doubleheader. Then Costa Rica and El Salvador at 8. But how cool is it for Houston Dynamo fans to be able to see players like Giles Barnes and Jermaine Taylor playing for Jamaica? So Bud Light reminds you, get down to BBVA Compass Stadium, catch Giles Barnes in Jamaica, catch the Houston Dynamo, the Houston Dash. Bud Light, longtime sponsors of me on the radio, and I can't tell you how thankful I am. Bud Light helped get the game of soccer on the radio here in Houston, Texas. And Bud Light reminds you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium. Okay, with that, we bring in Giles Barnes. Giles, thank you for coming on the program.
Anytime, Glenn.
Well, how are you feeling coming back from Chile? Long flight. You're back in the mix here, and you're going to get thrust right back into it against FC Dallas in a very big Western Conference game Friday.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it. It was obviously a long time away. It was helpful to me to see the boys go down against Portland as well. So I'm happy to be back to try and help us get the win against Dallas on Friday.
So, and I asked Brad Davis this earlier, the loyalties, you know, when you're with a national team like you are now with Jamaica, and the push, the tug and pull of club and country now has become a big part of your life here with the Copa America, now the Gold Cup coming up. And I asked Brad this, and this shouldn't be taken in a negative way, but is there a little guilt factor when you go away to play with your national team when, you know, you're leaving your club team behind? Because it really is a difficult situation for the player.
Yeah, it's difficult, you know, but there's, you know, there's such an honor in representing your country. That sometimes you can't refuse it, but, you know, since I've been involved in the national team, we've always tried to make sure that it fitted and suited with the Dynamo as well, because obviously they know that I love playing for the team. So as long as I can keep, like, fulfill most of my commitments with the Dynamo as well and manage to sneak away and get some international playing time too, there's always a little bit of compromise. So it's been really good so far.
In this case, this is a huge time here now, because now Brad Davis has been called up. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. And the Dynamo's next four of these games are against Western Conference opponents. I know you know this. Do you think it's time for MLS to get on the world schedule? Because I think it is.
I think, you know, I've been saying it for a while, Glenn. To be honest, you know, it kind of always, it was a little bit different for me coming over here. You know, my off season would be now if he was in Europe and that kind of stuff. But I think it just makes sense, you know, because obviously the teams want to do well, you know, and sometimes your best players or the players that you rely on week in, week out, manage to get into their national team. So it becomes unfair, you know. Dynamo could be missing 5 to 6 people at a time, you know, that could be starters. And then it's not a good situation for the club to be in. But, you know, that's just the way MLS is at the moment. Maybe one day we'll call for him.
Giles Barnes joining us here, and we take it back down to Chile and South America. First off, before we get into your group play and what you guys did and that, just tell me about the experience of being in Chile, a South American country, the way the tournament was set up. Take my listeners kind of behind the scenes with Giles Barnes in Jamaica.
I don't know if obviously, you know, with nickname the Reggae Boys, there's obviously a lot of music always playing. It was just good to get out there. The group and the camaraderie between us all is just incredible. You know, and being able to perform in such a prestige tournament like the Copa America was just incredible. You know, I grew up watching the Copa America. And so did near enough every single one of the boys on our team. So to be able to compete and give a good account of ourselves in a tournament like that with the Lionel Messis, the Di Marias, you know, the Vidals, the Sanchezes. Sometimes, you know, you think you'll never get to play against these great players, and, you know, that kind of gave us the opportunity to perform at that level. So it was a great experience. You know, the fans in and around Chile, the atmosphere, the excitement for the actual Copa America was insane. It was covered on television everywhere in Chile. Everyone knew who we were. It was a pretty surreal experience, really humbling.
So, listen, this is only going to be positioned as a positive for Jamaica when it comes to experience and getting stronger. We're seeing a lot of articles written like that. Jermaine Taylor said the same thing. You're in a group with Uruguay, Paraguay, and Argentina, three legendary soccer-playing nations. You got beat 1-0 in all of them. But obviously there's some real good positives to take away. So from the actual playing side of it, obviously I guess I'll start it off with by saying, well, you only conceded three goals to those teams.
You can say that. We as a group were actually disappointed, to be honest with you. We thought we had chances to beat Uruguay for sure. You know, and it was an unfortunate goal off of a set piece that we actually didn't think was a foul. So that was the first one. Paraguay, we realized we actually didn't play well as a team. Maybe the actual tournament football, you know, the second game kind of syndrome kind of hit us a little bit. We didn't really feel that we connected and made the right choices in and around the game, and it made it difficult for ourselves. And obviously we played against Argentina, you know, and you've got the best player in the world playing for them. And to manage to keep them at bay, obviously they had their chances. You know, you can't control players of Lionel Messi's standard and the Di Marias, etc. You can't defend them constantly for 90 minutes. But to be in and around a game like that with rubbing shoulder to shoulder with the world's greatest, it's as a team and as a nation, we should be very proud knowing that we didn't do that we did ourselves justice and knowing that we can perform better than that as well. And I need to go down, like, obviously, the 1-0 to Argentina and the rest of the people in the group, too. It was really good, to be honest with you. So we take all the positives moving into the Gold Cup and, obviously, for the World Cup qualifiers straight after that, too.
So where do you see, now that you've had your experiences here in the short term lately with Jamaica after getting called up, where do you kind of see Jamaica sitting in the overall CONCACAF scheme of things with the United States, Mexico, Costa Rica? Where do you kind of see Jamaica right now?
We see ourselves as up there, that's for sure. You know, it may surprise a few people that we think that, but we think we've got a really good team. If you look, most of our players play over in Europe. You know, we've obviously got some good MLS players. And, you know, when you're bringing that mix together and that passion and that pride, it's, we think we can go toe-to-toe with anyone. And, you know, we feel we proved that a little bit in the Copa too. So we think in this region, we're a force to be reckoned with.
He's Dynamo striker Giles Barnes, having an outstanding season in Major League Soccer. He's been called up with Jamaica, just coming back from the Copa America. He'll be a part of the upcoming Gold Cup, which, by the way, will be played here in Houston. And we'll talk more about that here tonight. I've got tickets to give away as well. Three games against two out of the three opponents in South America are top 10 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at your own individual performance, what do you glean out of this playing against the caliber competition that you did?
I think against Uruguay, from a personal point, I did well, you know, linking from midfield, getting forward in the attack, showed a lot of energy. I came close twice, so, you know, obviously provided that goal threat. Against Paraguay, I kind of played as a lone striker. And to be honest with you, it wasn't my finest game. It wasn't the team's finest game either. But, you know, obviously we worked hard as a team. And then Argentina, you know, I only came on for maybe 12 to 15 minutes. But I felt I came on and did myself no harm at all. And, you know, if we look at it as an overall thing, not just as an individual, but as a team, we think we've gone there and we've given a really good account of ourselves and put ourselves in not the shop window, that's the wrong word to say, but into the world spectrum of football with people watching us.
How did the Chilean fans take to the reggae boys?
They loved us. It was really good, actually. That was actually part of what I missed out there. The way they greeted us was incredible. You know, as soon as we got off the bus, they had Jamaica jerseys, they had Jamaica flags. They were rooting for us. They came to our games wearing Jamaica jerseys. It was, as I said, it was humbling and it was surreal. It's one of those things you just, you never really expect and you never quite know what to expect until it actually happened. So for it to happen and you be there, it was incredible.
How about the overall media attention and the fact that the eyes of the world were on the country of Chile?
Yeah, it was high. Like for their national team, obviously as well. I don't know if you've seen what happened with the Vidal incident,
yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things happened over there. But I think as a country and the representation of how they went about their football with the hosting and the looking after every single nation, it was incredible. So big respects to Chile.
He's Giles Barnes joining us here as we continue to talk Jamaica and Houston Dynamo here. Let's go back to your manager of Jamaica, Winnie Schaefer, who obviously has, in some ways, some people call him a little bit of a hired gun. He was a coach of national teams in Africa. How about his thoughts on this tournament, and did he get out of it what he wanted to as a manager here heading into the Gold Cup?
I think he got out of it the not the experience, but he kind of was able to tell what level we was capable of. And, you know, he came into the change room after the end of the game and after the tournament had finished for us, and he said he's so proud of us, and, you know, we've given such a great account of ourselves, and he's really looking forward to the Gold Cup. And he just said that we should show everyone that we can hang at this level, you know, which people have underestimated Jamaica before in previous years. So he was just really proud to be the coach of the team, and, you know, and he thanked all of us for being there. So it was he was really proud.
What do you like about him as a manager?
He's very laid back, you know. He kind of lets the team maneuver the way that that we feel that is best. He's very open to listen. And I think that makes him a good manager, you know, because he doesn't get to see us week in, week out. A lot of the boys that are in national team camp, we've known each other a long time. You know, we've grown up together, obviously playing in England or played against each other in MLS. So we know each other's strengths. So he'll sit and discuss things with us openly. And, you know, he's good at that. That's a good thing.
When does he step in, though, and get firm with decision-making?
Oh, when he knows what his team is, you know. Yeah. But he's always open for suggestions, and he's always open for people's input. You know, he'll say something, and he'll want the players' input. He likes the players to be involved so they feel like they're actually, you know, having, not a say, but they're having a big part in what they're doing for their country. But he knows his team, and he's very strong-willed with it. But he's always open to suggestions and other things, you know, just for his own brain fuel, I'd say, to be honest.
Well, you know that Brad Davis is in the 23 for the U.S. DeMarcus Beasley's in the squad, could be potentially be called up at some point around the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup. Does that make it even more exciting that some of your teammates are a part of it?
Yeah, you know, big congrats to them as well. You know, I know Brad's worked hard, especially after the World Cup. He's had a few problems with his knees this year, but, you know, he's buckled down. You know, that's what a captain does, and he's done really well. And he's got himself back in the national team frame. For me, Beasley probably retired a little bit too early for me. I think he still plays at the highest level wherever he is. So it's good to see him come out of the retirement for that as well. You know, and it's obviously two great professionals going to represent their country too, so good for them.
Just a quick word about being on the field with some of these greats from Argentina and maybe what it was like to be into that environment. Not that you haven't been in big environments before, but it is interesting to be in Chile, to be playing against the likes of Argentina and Lionel Messi.
Yeah, I've experienced obviously playing against big players in the Premier League, you know, the Cristianos at Man United, Gareth Bale at Tottenham, but I'd never seen so much, you know, euphoria over somebody as I did with Messi in the last game. The stadium was packed with Argentina fans screaming his name and just the people that want to see him, just to, you know, touch him, to get close to him. It was incredible to see, you know. He's the best footballer of our generation, so... It was he's getting the respect he deserves, and what a great guy he is as well. You know, he stopped and spoke to everybody that wanted to speak to him, took photos of everyone who wanted to speak to him. It was really it was great to see someone that's in the public eye so much, for all the right reasons, be such a gentleman off the pitch as well. It was incredible.
Well, you know what? I think you have a little bit of that too, and I think that makes Lionel Messi and yourself, I think, attractive to the public, is that there is a real sense of humility and appreciation that comes out of even Messi at that level, you know, and you as well.
No, I appreciate that. You know, without the fans, we're nothing as well. So, you know, everyone that wants to speak to me, they know I'm very approachable all the time. You know, I'm always willing to take photos and stuff. You know, it makes my day, making kids or families happy. So, you know, but to see someone so great and to still be so level-headed and humble was just it was incredible.
Well, Giles, thank you very much. Congratulations on a great experience with Jamaica, and we look forward to seeing you in action against FC Dallas this Friday.
Nice one, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
We're going right now to Guadalajara, Mexico, where one of the great contributors to this show, Tom Marshall, joins me, writer for ESPNFC.com. You can catch all his writings over there, and has just his finger on the pulse of what goes on with all the Mexican national teams and, of course, Liga MX. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the program.
No, thanks for having me, Glenn. It's always good fun.
All right, well, let's start it off with Copa America. Mexico did not have the best of efforts down there. I know it is somewhat of a split squad. What sort of pressure has come down from the media about that performance in Copa America? And then I would tag that with, must Mexico win the Gold Cup now?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely been intense. I mean, it's, you know, there's been, especially today, I mean, today is actually exactly 1 year since Mexico beat Croatia in the World Cup to advance from the group stage. So, you know, that was a massive victory for Mexico and Miguel Herrera. And 1 year on, there's been a lot of articles in the newspaper today about, one of the headlines was, where's the love gone between Mexico fans and Miguel Herrera? So, yeah, I mean, the Copa America has been a disaster. And I think it's not just the results and the performances, but it's also Miguel Herrera's kind of been saying things and doing things that people haven't really liked. And his popularity now is really at an all-time low.
Yeah, so take me into that a little bit more detailed. What has he done that has sort of irked the fans? Is it team selection? Is it player selection? Is it the tactical setup, the use of individuals? And why is the shine off Herrera so much now? Is it purely based on results?
I think, obviously, results are a massive factor, but I honestly think it's more off-the-field incidents. Like, he sent a tweet out before one of the preparation games against Brazil, which was basically urging people to support one of the political parties down here. And, you know, a lot of people really didn't like that. They didn't like the fact he was, you know, on a game day, giving his own opinions via his Twitter account on a political issue. And then, you know, he's doing all these commercials that I think people are sick of now. When Mexico have lost, he tends to blame the referee. I mean, it's just something that's almost a guarantee that he's going to blame the referee if Mexico lose. And, you know, on Saturday, there was a press conference, and he almost seemed like he was calling out one of the TV commentators down here for a fight. I mean, jeez. What he said was, like, he almost called him out and, like, say, oh, right, when I see you, you know, we're going to sort this issue out. Now, you know, he later said, you know, he's going to discuss it, but he really came across like he wanted to have a fight with him, which is a bit ridiculous, to be honest. So, yeah, I think it's more off-the-field stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think he's in fighting shape right now. He'd need a couple weeks in the gym before he, you know, maybe Freddie Roach needs to take him in there and shape him up a little bit before he decides to pick fights with people. But is it an ego now coming out here? Because, look, this guy was beloved and probably still is beloved in many ways beyond belief. Do you think this is ego? Because I got to think anybody in the public eye who's going to become political, number one, is crazy. Number two, he does seem to enjoy the limelight because he is a great character, and I don't think there's any question about that. But, boy, when you're managing a football team and your players are watching you do all this stuff publicly, I can't see that how that can behoove him.
It has been poor from him. And I say that because he's made mistakes, for example, the political tweet. And then instead of kind of being like, right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it, I'm going to stop now and I'm just going to focus on the field things. Because at the end of the day, he's not been that bad on the field. The results haven't been that bad. I mean, Copa America, yeah, but he was a definite B squad. With his A squad, he's not been as terrible as it seems from if you read the press down here. But I think he doesn't know when to stop. And I think he's all good with the press when kind of everyone's praising him, but he can't take criticism. And that goes back to when he was America coach and Atlantic coach. He doesn't like to be criticized. He doesn't know how to deal with it. And then when you project that into the national team level, it's just a whole new world for him. And at the moment, he just looks really stressed. He looks tired. You know, he's had a lot of traveling down to Chile and then back up now to the US. So, you know, the pressure is really legitimately on now. And there are changes in the federation as well. There's going to be a new president taking over later in the year. So, you know, the Gold Cup is an absolute must now. And that's just not me saying that. That's the federation, Herrera, players, the media, absolutely everybody.
Is it disappointing to you to see this effort in Copa America from Mexico? I mean, I go back to the days Luis Hernandez and, you know, I think it was the 99 Copa America. I'm trying to remember which one it was where, you know, they went out and shocked Brazil and scored a couple goals early and almost beat Brazil. And, you know, is it just too much for Mexico? Is there enough talent there to produce a good enough squad for Copa America and the Gold Cup? And do you think it's, you know, maybe you should be doing what the U.S. is. I think it's a missed opportunity for the United States not being in the Copa America, getting that sort of competition and experience bank for players. But what's your thought?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it's an opportunity to cut your teeth against some of the best in the world. I mean, three of the top five teams in the world, according to the FIFA rankings, are in the Copa America. So, you know, you're playing against the very best teams. I mean, the really disappointing thing for me about this Mexico team was that the average age was over 28 for each of the starting 11s. And I mean, you know, all right, you're going to do badly like Mexico did badly in 2011, but they sent an under-22 team then. So at least those players got experience in the bag. This time around, I think 70 to 80% of the players that Mexico fielded in the Copa America will never ever play again for the national team. So I think not just in terms of like sending your best team there, but also to give youngsters a go down there. I mean, I agree. It's a completely wasted opportunity.
All right, let's move on, and we're talking to Tom Marshall here of ESPN FC in Guadalajara, Mexico. And again, Tom, we truly thank you for all your great contributions to this show. Let's talk about Chicharito. I mean, there's a couple of big things going on with him. Obviously, his participation for the national team, but where do you think his next move is, and where may we see him go?
I mean, it's a difficult one. He's definitely not short of offers. His agents come out and said that you know, from Turkey to the United States to Spain, Germany, Italy, England. I mean, he's basically got offers from everywhere. It's a bit of an unknown. I think that more than ever now, I think that obviously he's 27 years old. It's got to be a move where to a club that he's definitely going to play. I mean, there's no absolute guarantees at that level of club soccer, but I mean, he has to be a shoo-in. There's no point in going now to Real Madrid. Because I think that if he does, then he's already got the reputation of being a super sub, which he absolutely hates. It's only going to re-emphasise that. And I think that for the national team as well, he's not guaranteed to start the Gold Cup. I mean, Mexico have got four very good strikers. So, you know, he's got work to do there as well. So it's once again a massive summer for Chicharito and so many unknowns.
I sympathise with him. I'm going to tell you why. Because I think he got the Manchester United interest and the Real Madrid interest at the wrong time of his career. But then again, as a young man, when Manchester United comes for you, how do you turn it down? You can't turn it down. And maybe his career is kind of going backwards. He should have been at some more mid-level clubs playing first-team football all the time and then progressed to a Manchester United or a Real Madrid at that point. As opposed to now, you know, he's got to find a deal, like you said, that's going to get him consistent playing time so that he can prove out being the 90-minute man that he wants to be.
No, definitely. I mean, yeah, you do sympathize as well because, I mean, even last summer, it's like, how can you turn down Real Madrid? And I think that when you get to that level as well, I think players, obviously, they have an ego. And I think that he would have thought, and, you know, let's not forget he's won, you know, two Premier League titles, he's played in Champions League final. He would have thought, right, if I can get an early opportunity at Real Madrid, get ahead of Benzema, which I know is a big ask, but you know he would have definitely thought that, then why can't I be the star? Why can't I be alongside Ronaldo and Gareth Bale? So, I mean, he took that opportunity. It didn't work out, but yeah. I mean, the bottom line now is that unless he wants to be remembered as this kind of super sub figure, and he has to go to a club where he's going to get regular minutes and score some goals, because at the end of the day, and if he, you know, in the space of the next 18 months, he's going to be Mexico's highest ever goal scorer. I think he's only six away from Borghetti at the minute. So, you know, he's closing in on that as well.
I want to take you to another player, Marco Fabian, who has always shown so many glimpses of just exciting play. I mean, overhead bicycle kicks. The guy is obviously a talented footballer. Why can't he get to the next level?
It's a huge question. I'm not even sure what's up with him. I think he's a player who needed to leave Mexico, to be honest, earlier, because he needed a change of scenery, he needed a change of, you know, environment, of people who were talking to him, the people who were training him. And yeah, as his career at the minute now, he's 25, going on 26. He's not young anymore. You know, he's still talking about going to Europe, but, you know, at the end of the day, you look at the Copa America, you look at Mexico's B squad, and he played in one of the three games. He came off the bench once. I mean, it's not a great indication of the level he's at. And I think that, yeah, he really, at the minute, is he's just so inconsistent with his performances, so brilliant at times, but just fails to live up to that. And I think that that's the weakness in his game.
He's Tom Marshall. You can follow him on Twitter. At Mexico World Cup is his handle. I suggest you follow him. Some of the best stuff coming when it comes to really digging into the Mexican national team, football in Mexico and Liga MX, and following all the players that from Mexico are playing around the world in various leagues. All right, I'm going to take you to the Women's World Cup because you are on the ground in Mexico. Has there been any interest in the Mexican women's national team in Canada? And does anybody care about Mexican women's football?
Yeah, I think when the World Cup comes around, it is of interest. And I think that, especially this time around, because it went so badly, I mean, Mexico have yet to win a game at the Women's World Cup in the whole history. I think this was the third time they've been in the competition, but this was the competition that Mexico were due to advance from. I mean, they're ranked higher than Colombia, and they failed to beat Colombia. So the reaction now is that Leo Cuellar, who's the head coach, I think he's been around for over 10 years, I think it's 15 years. I mean, he's coming under fire now, and it'll be a big surprise if he continues, because we had Mexico's probably biggest player, Charlene Corral, who came out and said, look, it's time for change, you know. This guy's been good for us, but we now need to move this forward. I mean, you know, other countries are overtaking us, like Colombia and even Costa Rica. So I think this could be it's been a bit of a bad summer for Mexico all around, really, even with the under-20s and the women and then the Copa America. So, I don't know, it's a bit of a bad time for the federation.
Tom, do you get a sense there's a bit of tokenism with the Mexican women's national team? In other words, are they investing in that team? Are they truly investing in it? Because as I look at the Mexican women's national team, it started off first as getting contacts with players in the United States and somehow trying to get people citizenship from the U.S. to play for them. Now there's more native, people that are players that live in Mexico, a part of the team. But has there really been investment from the federation, or is this just, hey, we kind of have to do this because, you know, women's football is growing around the world? And that's not to say the players aren't giving it their all and the coach isn't giving it their all, but is there truly enough investment? And is this a World Cup that could maybe make the Mexican Football Federation take it even more serious?
Yeah, I think there's a league that's going to start up pretty shortly, which will help. But, I mean, it's an amateur league, and I think it's more of a tournament than a proper official league. I mean, I think the way you've got to look at it with Mexico is that Mexican Federation makes a lot of money. I mean, you know, the games in the United States they play, you know, the games in Mexico, the amount of shirts they sell, this federation makes a lot of money, and it's their decision what to do with that money. And I think obviously, you know, whoever's deciding where the money should go isn't giving enough to the female game. And I mean, you know, if you look at it on a kind of societal level as well, I mean, it could have a huge impact if Mexico's women can actually do something at a World Cup. I mean, you know, for the whole society, it could change perceptions, because Mexico's a country where, you know, the kind of macho culture still kind of pervades. And then I think women's football can have a big role in, you know, not obviously changing it completely, but kind of a role in that helping women's rights, basically.
Yeah, this is a bit of a social issue. I don't think there's any question. I mean, teams like Ecuador that are in this, Colombia. I mean, I look at Colombia, I look at a country like France who, you know, 6 years ago I watched France and I go, wow, these girls have tremendous technique. There are some real similarities with the footballing culture of France that is coming through these ladies. And I remember them outplaying the United States, and they get in and around the 18-yard box. And they just did not have the power and strength to produce a goal and beat a goalkeeper like Hope Solo. Fast forward a couple of years, now they've got the physical side of the game, and that gap has been narrowed, and now they've married the two together, and they're difficult. And I saw that with Colombia as well. It's fascinating to see these great soccer-playing nations begin to take the women's game more serious, because you see it morphing before your eyes, and this is where I think the United States is maybe – been left behind a little bit, because as fast as other countries have progressed athletically, I don't think we've progressed technically and tactically as fast as we should in order to keep up with that athletic growth from other countries from around the world.
No, I mean, that's it for Mexico in a nutshell. I mean, there's not been that development. I think it doesn't matter where you start off, you know, the level of United States or where Mexico has come from, which is obviously quite a bit behind. But I think the real criticism here is that under Leo Cuellar, there's not been that kind of development. They've not been improving. I mean, still to win a game at the World Cup, I mean, tactically, I think, you know, the criticism that he's not kind of at the cutting edge of... I mean, look at the England manager. You know, he's played a different tactical system every game, you know, and they've made history by going to the quarterfinals. Look at Colombia, who've done, you know, an incredible World Cup. And I think Mexico kind of just like, why aren't we involved in this? And, well, it's going to be fascinating to see if there is a change in the managerial hot seat for the women's team.
All right, last thing. I just want to quickly go to Ronaldinho, then we'll let you go, Tom. And again, thank you very much for coming on the program. All right, so Ronaldinho goes to Querétaro. He kind of puts them on the map. In some ways, I make it a similarity to when David Beckham came here, although I think Beckham's reach was bigger because it was a whole league that he was sort of representing. But in some form or fashion, the star quality of Ronaldinho coming to Querétaro and spending time there, despite the fact that, you know, he didn't have the good training habits and all that, I got to think it maybe has helped this club as far as gaining some exposure and maybe lifting them to a new level of competitive spirit in Liga MX.
Yeah, I think that you can kind of divide it between off the field. Obviously, it's been a massive boom, and I think the president of the club has said, you know, we've just got so, obviously so much more press, so much more interest in our club than we've ever had. And I think on the field it was mixed, to be honest. There was some decent moments, but overall I felt that Ronaldinho wasn't at the level to kind of make the team better. So I'd say it's mixed, but definitely in terms of, you know, putting not just Querétaro, but I think the league as well, because nobody really considered Mexico as the kind of league that someone like Ronaldinho would come to. And now, you know, there's talk that Robinho might be replacing him at Querétaro. And obviously we've seen André Pierre Gignac come into Tigres, and I think, you know, I don't know, I think it's too early to say that the ball is actually rolling, but it might be just like a little turning point here where we're seeing Mexico actually become a place where you know, big-name players and even Europe-based players are kind of looking to with some interest.
Very interesting, Tom. And listen, I guess Ronaldinho is, you know, I think down in Brazil, there's a Brazilian club. I'm not sure who it is. I think it's Vasco da Gama that probably has the same idea with Ronaldinho. Now let's bring him here. It's not necessarily about how much we get out of him on the field, but it's an opportunity to kind of thrust our team into the spotlight, get more media attention. It's an interesting type of signing. Let's just put it that way.
No doubt. Yeah. It's a different way of doing things. It's almost like, you know, the MLS has always had that idea. But then I think it'd be very interesting now to see if other Mexican clubs as well kind of pick up on this and be like, you know, wait, we've got money as well, because we know that the Liga MX, the clubs have, if there's one thing they have, it is money. So it'd be interesting to see if any of them think, oh, you know, look what Querétaro did. You know, why don't we follow that? I mean, you know, look at the attention and the, you know, like you said, Glenn, at the start, they put us on the map. And Ronaldinho put Querétaro, a minnow in the Liga MX terms, onto the map. So, it's something definitely to look out for.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. As always, we appreciate you wrapping up our show in style here tonight. You're the best. You're from Guadalajara. You're Tom Marshall. You can catch his writings at ESPN FC. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it.
And Tom, by the way, is going to be in Houston coming up here, and I owe him a dinner as Mexico will play Honduras coming up here in July. That'll wrap it up tonight. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Also, make sure you get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters. That's where it's all at. And again, we thank all the great sponsors of this show. Thank you, Bud Light, as we say goodnight.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.